The second case for oral argument this morning is Dallas and Marjorie Cole Appellants versus Wellmark of South Dakota and Della Cheddar Insurance Appellees. For the appellant, we have Mr. N.D. Nacer, attorney from Sioux Falls. And for the appellees, we have Mr. Justin Smith and Ms. Christine Kreider representing Wellmark and Mr. Timothy Gebhardt representing Della Cheddar Insurance. Now, I understand, Mr. Smith, you'll be speaking this morning for 10 minutes. Is that correct? And then, Mr. Gebhardt, you'll be speaking for 10 minutes? Very well. Mr. Nacer, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleased the court and counsel and honored guests, I would introduce the court to James M. Nacer, who is an attorney at law seated with me today, who had just recently joined my firm after completing his bar requirements.
Welcome.
If it would assist the court in understanding this case, I would like to present the spectrum of cases that we're dealing with in a model. Over on this side is a situation where an applicant submits a health insurance application. The company in that circumstance has taken no action. They have not in any way extended themselves into a relationship. They have not empowered an agent to try to move the company closer toward the applicant. In that situation, which are the four cases that the defendants are dealing with today, the Worden case, the Bullis case, the Miller case, and the Manning case, those cases show the South Dakota law that's undisputed and which we don't dispute, that there is no duty on the part of the insurer in that circumstance to respond, to give a timely response, or frankly, to give any response, because they have not extended themselves. On the other end of the spectrum, of all of these cases that of this nature, and I should categorize them as being cases where an application is submitted and a policy is never quite issued, and someone has perhaps claimed that they are misled or that there should have been coverage. On the other end of that spectrum are the cases like Grand Pre, also cited in our brief. And those are the cases where, unlike this side, the insurer has extended itself toward the applicant, entered into a relationship, empowered its agents to some degree to encourage the relationship, induce reliance, and the applicant has changed his or her position. And so the question today is, where does this case fall on this spectrum? And we all know that the law is a law of relationships. If you choose to engage in a relationship, you have duties. You must be responsible for your actions in encouraging and inducing that relationship. And so that's the context I would like to have the court consider this case in. Along this spectrum about here, there is a case called Schlepp. These cases say no duty because there was nothing extended by the insurer. Schlepp says we agree with that, and Schlepp is cited in Miller over here. Schlepp says that, however, the parties can contract themselves into duties, into a contract of insurance, or they can conduct themselves in such a manner as to induce a relationship. And it can result in, and Schlepp names estoppel, it names promissory estoppel, it names detrimental reliance, and so forth. An implied contract. The parties can conduct themselves so as to give rise to implied obligations. Now, that's our case. We start from Schlepp on over to Grand Pre. And we believe our facts fall there. The defendants believe we're still stuck over here with Worden, Bullis, Manning, and so forth, and Miller. Now, the key facts in this case to be considered, since this is a summary judgment grant in favor of the defendants and against my clients, Dulles and Margie Cole from Brookings, the key facts must be considered in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, the Coles. And so if there are factual disputes, we would expect that our facts and our inferences would control since we didn't yet get a trial. The key facts are that Dulles and Margie Cole, residents of Brookings, had three minor children back in 2003 living with them. And Danielle, Drew, and Dustin, they were insured for health purposes with a well-marked Blue Cross Blue Shield group certificate through Margie's job at the Brookings School District, and they had been for 5 years. This was a group policy, not the policy we're dealing with here today. Margie was changing employments and would be done with her employment September 30, 2003, a key date. So in August of 2003, when she made the decision to change jobs, she began looking for options for their health insurance. They had never been without health insurance, and they viewed it clearly as being essential for their three kids that they maintain this health insurance in continuous effect at all times. They had a number of options because they'd never had a major claim. They were perfectly insurable, they felt. And by the way, Della Cheddar thought they were quite insurable as well, the agent. They had guaranteed issue coverage through Dulles's employment available. They could have cobra'd on Margie's. They had, then of course they were insurable. Now beginning in August of 2003, Margie went shopping for the best rates, got several quotes, and since her mother liked DakotaCare that she had, Margie said, I'll get a quote from DakotaCare. Well, Margie didn't know that DakotaCare did not have individual policies of insurance at that time. And so she therefore contacted a DakotaCare agent who had advertised that she sold DakotaCare. In fact, in the particular ads, it only said DakotaCare, and that was Della Cheddar, the defendant. And so she called Della, and Della said, well, I don't think this is for you, this DakotaCare, but I also write insurance, individual policies of health insurance for Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I think we have a policy for you. And it was the Blue Select policy, and so she immediately dropped off at their home in their mailbox, the Blue Cross Blue Shield materials, pre-printed materials, booklets, highlighted. They were so impressed with her immediate personal service, they called her and they said, we'd like to come in and do something with you and write this insurance. And so they had a meeting. Now, the meeting was in Della's office, at her home office upstairs, and at that meeting, Cheddar helped them fill out their application. They didn't have it completed. They had questions. She helped them by her own testimony. Now, Margie and Dulles at that meeting explained to Cheddar how Margie would lose her health insurance on September 30 and how they needed to have no break in coverage. Cheddar took out a pre-printed Wellmark form. This form is only available to authorized Wellmark agents by testimony. It's an undisputed fact. Together, they filled out the application part of the document, which everyone agrees was accurately and completely filled out. During the process, Cheddar explained to them that as a Wellmark agent, she was authorized to offer them the opportunity to select their own effective date. Now, if the court would look at the, or at least make note of, the application form that is Exhibit D in the appellant's brief, at the top of that form, there are two options. Option two says Wellmark will assign the effective date. Option one says, in substance, premium must be submitted to request an effective date. And the option one is that the applicant can request the effective date. There is nowhere in option one or in option three that doesn't exist in here where outside of option two, Wellmark is going to select or assign the effective date of the insurance. And so you have to remember as we proceed through these facts that Della Cheddar has made it clear that she is their agent. She is the Kohl's agent. She is also Wellmark's agent. And that testimony is undisputed in the case. And, of course, she only has the right to do these things because she has been empowered to do so and trained to do so by Wellmark. Now, bold capitalized print in the application, the only place where the print is bold and capitalized, and that's on page 3 near the bottom of the application, says, Wellmark underwrites coverage up to the effective date of the policy, regardless of when the application was approved. Should you have any change in health status prior to the effective date, you must notify Wellmark. And the word underwrites, as was testified to and as is briefed, the common ordinary meaning of the word underwrites, and it is not defined to the contrary in the policy, is to insure, to accept a risk, and to insure. Now, there are other definitions of the word underwrites. They aren't, I don't think they're even found in the dictionary, but in the industry, they use the word underwrites to say we're going to examine a risk and evaluate it and see if we want to accept it. That is not the common meaning of the term. The Kohl's, using the common meaning of the term,
Mr. Dasher, don't you have to look at how it's used? The usage you're using is a noun, and in the app it's used as a verb. And the second meaning you're talking about is the verb meaning, and the first is a noun.
The Wellmark underwrites means Wellmark insures the risk. It's a verb. They insure this risk right up to the date of the application. That's what this sentence says. And frankly, it couldn't be much more clear unless you use a meaning that is not a common meaning.
Except, Mr. Nasser, you know, I mean, it's one of our cardinal principles that when we construe a contract language or statutory language, we don't look at things in isolation. And right next to this language about underwriting coverage, the same bold language says that there's no coverage until it's been reviewed and approved and they've been notified in writing of the approval of coverage.
Yes.
And Mr. Kohl testified, no dispute about this, that he fully understood that that meant that under no circumstances were they to get coverage or insurance until it had been approved, effective, and they had been notified in writing. So I understand your focus on the Wellmark underwrites coverage, but you can't take that in isolation without the other adjoining sentence.
And you're correct.
And the Kohl's own understanding of what this meant.
Let me, first of all, take a small issue with the characterization of the testimony that Dallas Kohl gave. And we have, in fact, disputed that testimony.
Well, let's not even talk about that. Let's just talk about the statutory
language. All right. The statute, the contractual language,
right,
in the application. Della Cheddar was Wellmark. Della Cheddar to them was the corporation. And he testified also that when she was doing something, she represented that she was Wellmark to them and that she writes individual policies of insurance for them. And therefore, what is the meaning to the Coles of this application when they are being told you can select the effective date if you pay us premium, you will be underwritten back to the date of the application. Now, in this case, it's not the date of the application because they selected an effective date as they were given the right to do before that was after the application. But it was at October 1, so they would have continuous coverage, which Della Cheddar well knew they needed, and she admits it. And so when you're looking at Wellmark, it is not, it's undisputed. Wellmark did not issue the policy. And like I said, we fall in that range of cases where the policy was never quite issued. And that's where Grand Pre and those principles on conditional receipt come in. Now, the significance is not was there a policy issued, because there wasn't. But was this the kind of case on the spectrum that gave rise to duties? Because that's the issue. And Grand Pre says yes, it does give rise to duties. And Grand Pre, as a matter of fact, says that the insurer cannot sit there and take its time when they've got your premium and they have entered into a conditional receipt situation, and they can't just ignore you and then, for example, as in Grand Pre, after the death, then decide you were uninsurable.
So what do we have here? You have no express contract. So you have an implied contract? Is that what you're trying to say?
You have, well, according to Grand Pre, you have a contract of insurance that is defeasible. That's the language that is used. And we have a contract of insurance, and you know that if they don't, in good faith, and good faith applies according to Grand Pre in this situation, in good faith, if they don't evaluate this claim properly, then they are in breach of their obligation to do so under a conditional receipt type of situation.
So unless they say flat out no, it means yes.
Unless they say yes, they have to act, in other words.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. They have obligated themselves not to sit there when they have entered into this relationship, when they've entered into this agreement and induced the clients to change position and said, we're going to insure you back to your continuous date. There's obligations that accompany that, Your Honor. There just are.
Well, there's two conjunctions in this sentence. There's reviewed.
I'm sorry, I'm not following you, Your Honor.
Okay, the language, the other language that you did not discuss about, the policy or the application had to be reviewed and approved, etc. It says reviewed and approved and notified in
right.
writing of the approval. Now, where does the notification in writing of the approval, where does that fall into your analysis?
That, in the minds of the Coles, is the entirety of the writings that they were doing with Della when she accepted it and approved it and said, you're all set.
Two minutes, yeah.
All right. You're all set. You're good to go. And they felt they were insured from October 1 on. No one told them differently. And it's incumbent then, in a conditional receipt type of situation, there are many varieties of them, but it's incumbent that there be duties recognized on the part of the insurer toward the applicant in that circumstance. That's the only issue we're dealing with. Are there duties? We were knocked out of this lawsuit because the court felt there weren't duties. He likened it to the Worden cases. We are not that kind of case. We are on the other end of the spectrum. There are duties. And so the issue becomes one of fact. Did we breach the duty? Or did they breach the duty to my clients? And we never got there. We never had a chance to test that. And so all I'm saying is, out of this relationship, look at Schlepp, an implied contract can arise, an estoppel can arise. There is a contract of insurance that was created by the conditional receipt information. It is defeasible. It can be voided if the conditions are not met later. But the truth is, those conditions were met. And had they had to tell us if they wanted some kind of a rider or a condition or something we were supposed
Do we have to read out of the contract then the words notified me in writing? Do we just ignore that language?
No. They were notified in writing. There was a lot of writing, and the writing was she took down their own automatic withdrawal statement for continuing premiums. That's what a conditional receipt is. They've got their check that cleared. That was a writing that came back to them. We don't have the policy, but you're going to completely negate Grand Pre and the whole line of cases, because these are all cases where the policy wasn't issued.
Your time has expired, Mr. Nacer.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Smith, you have 10 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Justin Smith, and along with Christine O'Connell, we represent Wellmark of South Dakota, Inc. in the appeal brought by the Coles today. Your Honors, the circuit court in this case granted summary judgment in favor of Wellmark and Della Cheddar Insurance, finding there were no issues of material fact and that the cases of Manning and Miller applied very clearly to the facts of this case. The Coles on appeal have raised a very large number of issues, but once you peel back all of the layers and get to the heart of what this case is about, you realize that Wellmark's position is very clear and straightforward in its simplicity. The application form, when it was completed by the Coles, was an offer for a contract, which Wellmark, as the offeree, had no obligation to accept. You apply the very clear precedents in Warden, Manning, and Miller that hold to that rule. Then you look at the very clear and unambiguous language of the application form, as partially quoted by Justice Zinter, which said, I understand and agree that the health and life coverage applied for will not be effective until Wellmark or USOL, as the underwriters of the health and life coverages, respectively, have reviewed and approved this application and notified me in writing of the approval of such insurer's coverage.
Is that part of what's known as the fine print?
Yes, Your Honor. Immediately above the line where the Coles signed.
Did the Coles read it before they signed it?
Dellis Cole testified that he had reviewed the entire application form, and Dellis Cole testified that he completely understood that, quote, at the time he was meeting with Della Cheddar and when he signed the application, that he understood that it was subject to the approval of Wellmark.
But they certainly acted like they thought they had insurance.
There's no evidence in the record that they proceeded on the basis that they had insurance. The first time that Wellmark ever heard from the Coles was after their daughter, Danielle Pinkman, had been injured. There's evidence in the record showing that Wellmark sent two letters to the Coles after the time they submitted their application. There's evidence in the record that Wellmark never heard back from them. All of this evidence was presented to the trial court.
Of course, and since it's a summary judgment, we have to take Mr. Nacer's side of the facts, and that would wipe out any claims that they ever got any kind of notices.
That is correct, Your Honor. On appeal, taking the facts in light most favorable to the Coles, they claim that they never received any of the mailings from Wellmark until March of the next year, when they do admit that they received a refund check several months after they had contacted Wellmark about their policy. in terms of that issue, identical arguments were made in the Warden and Manning cases and were found immaterial by this court. Warden established the duty of an insurance company that applications for insurance are nothing more than an offer. And the court in those
Mr. Smith, understanding that, what Mr. Nacer brought up, and it was the policy provided for an option where they had a checkbox to indicate that they wanted to choose a date, and a check was given, which was cash. What's the effect of that? What's the purpose of that box if they can pick a date? And does that put an additional duty on Wellmark?
Your Honor, it's very important to look at the application form and read the actual language of that option one. Option one allows the applicant to request an effective date. That is the actual wording of the application form. The application then says premium must be submitted to request an effective date. In addition, it does not matter, requesting an effective date cannot nullify the entire language of the remainder of the application up to and including all of the language in Section H of the application, the agreement certification section. The entire application contained thoroughly contingent language up to and including the very language of Option 1, allowing the Coles to, again, quote, request an effective date only.
But doesn't that, following up, though, that doesn't the fact that there's the date checked and then the check written and cashed distinguish this from the cases where we've said there's no duty to respond in a timely manner? Doesn't that now create a duty to respond in a timely manner, which then creates a question of fact?
It does not, Your Honor, for several reasons. One reason would be that the last language of Section H, agreement certification, must be highlighted here. That language says, should my application not be approved, my payment will be refunded in full.
But the refund, they claim, if you use theirs, doesn't come till March. So isn't there a duty, isn't there a question of duty that they had a quicker response so they knew whether or not they had insurance?
According to the Warden and Manning cases, Your Honor, no.
But did they involve a date that they checked and a check and that was cashed by the company?
They did not, Your Honor, but just as here, they involved very explicit and clear limiting language in the application, and it was specifically on that basis that the courts in Warden and Manning made their decision that there was no duty on the insurance company. In this case, here on appeal, the limiting language in the application was even arguably more clear and more strict in terms of limiting the specific manner in which acceptance would have to be made of the Coles offer contained in their application. Again, the language had several conjunctions contained within it, requiring review, approval, and notification in writing of the approval. That taken together with the allowance for the Coles to, again, request an effective date, and the final wording of the application stating that if the application was not approved, that the refund check would be refunded, shows that the Warden and Manning cases should, again, be applied very clearly here, as the circuit court did. The Coles arguments on appeal attempt to establish the inverse of reality that has been set down by this court in the cases of Warden and Manning. According to the Coles, by its pre-printed and mass-distributed application form, Wellmark somehow made an offer for contract, which the Coles then accepted by filling out the form. This contradicts the clear holdings in Warden and Manning. It contradicts the clear and unambiguous language of the application form, and it indeed contradicts their own testimony. When Dulles Cole testified that at the time of the application, he understood that it would be subject to Wellmark's approval. All of the Coles' arguments, it's very important to realize, are history repeating itself here on appeal. In the Warden case, the appellant there made many, if not most, of the same arguments as to misrepresentation of the effective date of the insurance, as to a failure in the duty to procure insurance, made arguments regarding representations of the insurance agent as to the effective date. They even made arguments there on appeal in Warden about the agent's supposed authority to bind the insurance company. In the Manning decision, later,
two minutes, counsel.
Thank you. The appellant made an argument urging this court to adopt a duty requiring the insurer to completely process an application once it was received. Then they also made arguments regarding the scope and the existence of an agency relationship. In the Manning case, authored by then-Judge Meyer Henry, this court affirmed summary judgment based on the rules as to insurance applications, and specifically because of the limiting language in the two applications. As shown by the Coles briefs on appeal and the arguments of Mr. Nacer, many of these same arguments are repeated today, and for all of the same reasons, they should be rejected. The facts and arguments before this court, again, are virtually identical to those that were made in Warden and Manning. For this court to reverse Judge Genap's decision, granting summary judgment, Warden and Manning would basically have to be overruled because of the extreme similarity of those cases to what we have here today. One minor point in regard to the language referencing Wellmark, quote, underwrites coverage back to the effective date, the rest of that sentence should also be read. The Coles ignore the last clause of the sentence, regardless of when the application was approved. Here there was no approval, there was no notification in writing of that approval. For all of these reasons, we would ask this court to affirm the circuit court's grant of summary judgment based on the lack of any issues of material fact and the clear precedent and language of the application. One minor point in the Grand Prix case, that is clearly a distinguishable case. In that case, there was a conditional receipt. One whole page of the Northwestern Reporter is taken up with a photocopy print of that conditional receipt that contained clear terms for a contract of temporary insurance. There's absolutely no evidence here that there were any terms for any type of temporary insurance. And as argued in our briefs, South Dakota law does not permit temporary or interim contracts of health insurance.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Mr. Gebhardt, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Chief Justice Gilbertson, members of the court, counsel. Mr. Nacer started out telling the court there's a spectrum. There's Warden over here on the left and Grand Prix over here on the right, and there's Schlepp up here somewhere, probably about 30 miles an hour. Well, Schlepp's the Minnesota case. Let's talk about the South Dakota cases. And one of the things Mr. Nacer said is that what qualifies or distinguishes these cases that are over here on the left that he claims do not apply is that it's a situation where the applicant sends in an application to the insurance company and nothing else has been done. Evidently, Mr. Nacer is not reading Warden close enough. Warden is as closely analogous to this case as you could imagine. The person, the individual, went to an insurance agent and asked for an application. The application was provided. It was taken home. It was returned to the agent, just as here. The agent submitted it to the insurance company for approval, and it was not approved. It contained language similar to the language in the Wellmark application here. And notably, in Warden, one of the claims that was made was the agent said, "You're insured when the application is complete." The Warden court said there is no cause of action for that under South Dakota law. That's a statement of opinion because the agent has no ability to bind the insurance company. Warden is directly applicable to this case. As Mr. Smith indicated, basically to overturn the summary judgment here, you have to overrule Warden after how many years of precedent that's been followed by this court. Now let's talk about Grand Prix and Mr. Smith.
Before you go to that, is there a distinction between the agent in Warden and the agent here? Counsel is arguing that the agent here is Wellmark.
No, there is not a distinction at all. The agent in Warden was in fact a banker who was authorized to write for the insurance company in that case. The same is true here. Della Cheddar is an agent who could write for a variety of companies, including Dakota Care. As Mr. Nacer indicated, the only reason they called Della Cheddar was because she could write for Dakota Care, not because she could write for Wellmark. There is nothing in fact, evidence of the fact that she could not bind Wellmark. It's undisputed in the record that there is a general agent in Sioux Falls that has the contract with Wellmark. Della Cheddar, in turn, has a contract or a sub-agency under the general agent. She could not communicate directly with Wellmark. The record and the evidence is undisputed that Della Cheddar never got a copy of or knew what endorsements had been sent out by Wellmark. Once the application goes in, it is undisputed that everything is done by Wellmark. There's no further duty on the part of Della Cheddar in this case, and that's something this court recognized in Warden. The claim there was, you know, I didn't get insurance, you said I should have had it, you're responsible. The court said there was no liability because the agent acted promptly. It provided the application, got the application back, made sure it was complete, and submitted it to the insurance company. Moreover, in Warden, the insurance company wrote requesting additional information to the claimant and to a doctor. A copy of that letter was sent to the agent. In this case, no copy of the letters, whether they were received or not, were sent to Della Cheddar. This court never said, agent, you had a duty to contact them because a letter went out. The fact of the matter is that the Grand Prix case that is on this other end of the spectrum, there is a hand or a written conditional receipt. A conditional receipt that says you have coverage during this interim period of time. The Wellmark application is about as contrary to that as you can get. There's nothing in there that says you are going to have coverage from the date that the agent takes the application and check and sends it in.
Let me just ask you a question along the dates and so forth. Now, the Warden case and I think the Manning case also, those are life insurance.
Correct.
This is a health insurance where the date became very important to at least the applicant here of making sure that they had continuing health insurance as of a date, and that was part of the whole discussion. So when they file the application, I mean, there is a difference here in timeliness, isn't there, that may create a duty with this health insurance request as opposed to these life insurance policies that involve these other cases?
I don't know.
And they also wrote a check that was cashed in this case.
First, Your Honor, I don't know that that is a significant difference because I'm sure the plaintiff who died in Warden, the time was important to him also.
Well, but with health insurance, you have to admit, I mean, the whole idea here was that they continue to have coverage.
Right, and they contacted Della Cheddar to apply for a Wellmark policy. As Mr. Nacer indicated, they had COBRA rights under the Brookings School District policy that Mrs. Cheddar had. They were eligible for coverage under the Mr. Cheddar's employment. You know, there was the one contact, and that was it. The fact that Wellmark cashed the check, I don't know that there's any evidence that Della Cheddar knows what happens to the check. The form says if you want to select your effective date, you must submit a premium with it, and that's what she did. So
but,
I don't.
But could there be a creation of a duty that they at least let them know that they have been that there's riders or that they've been rejected before that date?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, for a couple of reasons. Number one, all Della Cheddar could tell from the system that's available is that a rider had been sent out and the possibility of allergies for the son being excluded had been discussed. We in law recognize, although it's rebuttable, a presumption that mail sent is received. What you're basically would be doing is saying an agent who finds out something was mailed has to call and make sure the U.S. Postal Service did its job.
No, but isn't this a question of, you know, this is summary judgment.
Right.
All I'm saying is maybe this is a jury question.
No, because the question is, did she have a duty to do anything. And no, she did not under the warden decision. And your question is, well, since it's health insurance, is there a greater duty? That, again, is a question of law. And no, there is no greater duty because she complied with the duty as established in that spectrum of South Dakota cases. And as I say, what we're trying to do here, what Mr. Nacer is trying to do, is flip these over and create something different. If the life insurance is the same, I think that was the case in Grand Prix, too, is that it was a life insurance policy. So arguably that wouldn't apply. The simple fact of the matter...
Do we have any health insurance cases that you found on this issue?
Not that I found that come to mind there. Most of the litigation, I think, has been in the life insurance area, largely because, as we all know, if we turn on the TV now, health has become a bigger issue over the last 20 years. But basically, Della Cheddar's duty was to assist the Coles in their application for insurance. It's undisputed that the application that she helped them submit was complete and acceptable. Had the riders been returned, there would have been an insurance policy. If you look at pages 4 to 8 of the appendix of Walmart's brief, you'll see Della Cheddar doesn't even get a copy of those letters or the endorsements. And in fact, it says on those letters, if you have a question, call Walmart. Della Cheddar did exactly what law imposes on her to do as a duty. She assisted the Coles in their application for insurance. It was then up to Walmart to make a decision on that policy. To impose any greater duty on Della Cheddar is, as I've indicated, to overrule Warden, to overrule Trammell and the other cases that say there is no greater duty here.
But her own testimony, she did recognize she obviously did try, she says she called him.
She
so
says
she must
called,
have recognized that she had a duty.
She says she called them, and again, if we take it in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, she did not. That's fine. She didn't have a duty. I would also submit that if she did call them, that is not necessarily the recognition or creation of a duty. I may give a person a ride to wherever, to pick a bad example, but give them a ride. I don't know that the law creates a duty for me to do anything further. A duty is different than perhaps an obligation or a courtesy. A duty is something the law has to recognize and apply across the board for every person in that circumstance.
Your time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Nacer, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Grand Prix says that the insurance company is not receiving a premium without assuming any risk. It is assuming the risk that if something unrelated to insurability had happened to Grand Prix subsequent to the application date, and regardless of whether the company accepted or rejected the policy, the company would be liable if Grand Prix had been insurable at the date of application as defined. That's duty. That gives rise to obligation. And they note the obvious advantage that the applicant acquired was that if the insurance company made a determination that he was insurable, he would be covered during the interim period. The cases uniformly in a conditional receipt situation recognize interim coverage, although they refer to it on most cases as defeasible. Some cases don't. Some cases lock it in whenever there's a conditional receipt. That's not our law in South Dakota, but we've cited those cases for you.
Do we have to overturn Manning and Warden?
No.
If we accept your version of this duty?
Not at all. I still think they're good law. I think that when the insurance company, if they make it clear in this process that they're not inducing change and reliance engaging in a relationship of some sort, not an insured relationship, but a relationship that is a predecessor to that. Now, they cashed this check. How many millions of dollars do they hold while they're evaluating? They obviously have some kind of obligations.
All right.
They're earning interest on the money.
Mr. Nacer, at Grand Prix, if there was a specific conditional statement, and it was printed out, and you're really asking us to imply that from the fact that there was a check and an application, are you not?
Not at all. I'm saying that they took what could have been a bare application and they made it into a combination document. That was, it says application on top, but it is more than that. And it provides the same thing the conditional receipt document in Grand Pre provided, which is coverage back to the date of the application, or in this case, to the effective date of insurance. And it gives them the right to select the effective date. That is conditional receipt. We've identified the Blue Cross Select policy as the actual policy of insurance. We've exchanged the consideration. We've set up continuing automatic withdrawal forms for the future. I think Mr. Smith said the plaintiffs did not ever check into this matter. Why would they? Their check was cashed. They knew that. They got that check back, and they assumed that the automatic withdrawal form was paying their premiums.
But Mr. Nasser, Grand Prix said that the conditional receipt was explicit on providing temporary coverage. Here we have language that says that Wellmark doesn't provide any coverage until X and Y and Z.
Until Della Cheddar, as Wellmark, first of all, approves it. That's what they were led to believe. And we come back.
Let me stop you right there. Because what they were led to believe has to be tempered by what the language of the contract was. People can't go around saying, I was led to believe this and this and this, if there's very explicit language in the application that says the opposite.
Does the contract, Your Honor, and I ask this rhetorically, does the application tell who Wellmark is? It does not. It is not defined. They thought from her recommendations that she was an authorized agent, and she said she didn't write just applications. She wrote individual policies of insurance for them. Now, did they empower her?
Is the agency a question of law, or is that a question for the jury?
I think that, well, first of all, we have to get to the correct law, and there is a duty. So, obviously, I'm saying we never got to the jury questions. We do get to them if we go past the question of law. Now, on the last page of my brief is, to me, a very important page. And it says, it's a page that our clients never get to see, but it says effective dates for new applicants. And it says the agent may assign any effective date up to 60 days following the date the application is signed. Now, that's authority given the agent by Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield to bring this process together to establish a relationship. It is not a Worden case. It is a Grand Pre type of case. In fact, it is a variation of case that's talked about in Grand Pre and approved of. And so what I'm on Grand Pre, they also indicated that in the majority opinion, this is not to say that the insurer's officers could defeat the applicant's right to temporary insurance by arbitrarily refusing to form an opinion of the applicant's insurability until applicant's death. They must prove at trial that the commencement of interim coverage, and that's the defendants must prove at trial, that the commencement of interim, at the commencement of interim coverage, they had determined the applicant was an uninsurable risk. All right, I'm saying we don't need to answer all the questions today. We need to know whether there's a duty. And there is a duty if we fall on this side of the spectrum. Whether they breached it, that's the question of fact. But the fact is there is a legal relationship between that insurer. They deliberately, as part of the requirement that they affirmatively market their policies, statute, a regulation in the state of South Dakota cited in our brief, they affirmatively market them. That creates a duty, and that's after all of these cases were decided. That's that, that regulation. The duty, what they're doing is they're taking, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too at the expense of the public. That's what this amounts to. And I don't blame them. It's commercial practice. But they are inducing people to get closer to them, to wait around, leaving their money in their account. Who's going to go look for other insurance when they're holding $567 of your money? And you've selected the effective date. And they're going to, they're inducing you to wait around and rely on that. That's what all of the cases have held for over 50 years. When that happens, they've gone too far to be able to say, we don't have any obligations to you.
So you're saying anytime they cash a check, they have in effect insured the applicant?
No, I am not. I wouldn't go that far. Some cases hold that. There are about half the cases that hold that there is interim insurance created from the cashing of the check alone. I don't think we'd go that far. I think that looking at us, we would stay on the spectrum with Grand Prix. That's what we would. It's a conditional receipt situation. They've induced us to change our position. It is undisputed that Della Cheddar, as a dual agent, has testified they wanted that insurance and she knew it. She merely assumed that they must have changed their minds. That's a breach of agency. You don't do that. And her actions do bind Wellmark, Blue Cross, and Blue Shield, unlike the agents in some of these earlier cases who just submitted things for them. She's a dual agent here, and that's a very important consideration. Why cash the check? I guess I'd leave you with that. Why cash it in the first place if you're not trying to hold on to that policyholder?
Well, why have the refund provision?
Well, because it is a conditional receipt. I'm not saying that we have the right to the issued policy yet. I'm not saying that at all. This is not an insured insurer situation yet on the basis of the permanent policy of insurance. But we're in the world of conditional receipt, and when it's conditional, there are obligations that flow back and forth. That's what I'm saying. They're moving us toward that process of being insured. This is part of the process. And so in that process, they extend themselves to us. They create a relationship. And that's where the duties come in. That's exactly where the duties come in. And so it doesn't matter if they never issued it. They still had interim insurance. They said regardless of when the application's approved. It
How
goes
long
back.
Is this interim insurance good for?
Excuse me?
How long is this interim insurance good for?
A reasonable time until they finish their duties and process it.
Okay. Thank you. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.